Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Happy Tuesday, everybody. Our thanks, by the way, to Andrew Callahan, who took out time today to talk about the Patriots. I'm really surprised they're embroiled in another scandal. As I pointed out, I actually do believe Belichick when he says, I knew nothing about this. Sometimes the left hand doesn't know what the right hand is doing. This is the video group trying to do a webisode and so forth. They sit around in a room and they come up with ideas and say, hey, let's try this. And you think if Belichick walked in and said to him, hey, by the way, you can film the sideline, that'd be great. He probably didn't even know in a million years they were doing it. Believe me, it's very possible. It's very possible. I mean, Matt, do you have any idea what the suit is planning for today on the other side of the building?
I may have a couple of ideas, but I'm going to say no.
Mm-hmm. And you're in the same building. Yeah, I'm not here to defend the Patriots. I'm just saying, you see stuff like this, like, oh, it's the Patriots. Well, I mean, that's the reaction you're going to get. I mean, they have earned that over time. But there's also times you sit back and go, okay, this is a complete... What are they doing, webisodes? Is that what they're doing? They're
It's some sort of webisodes. I think it's similar to the Do Your Job segment where they're just following this advanced scout. And in that video, they were claiming that they were trying to get some on-field perspective. But what I don't get is it wasn't directing themselves on the field. The video was clearly at the Bengals sideline. And you didn't see any Patriot scout in those shots that Bengals security people came over. So this is why I still think the Patriots' entire argument is bogus.
Except I do know the director of it, the person who was directing it, wasn't there. He had gone out. I think he'd gone to the bathroom, I think, and had come back. Right, so you didn't have the person directing it there. So, I mean...
That could be something, yeah.
So suddenly you're left there with a, believe me, as somebody who has to produce pieces, and I do have to produce TV pieces, all those roars that you see on Unrivaled, I'm the producer of that. So I write it, I produce it, the whole thing. All right? Request footage, B-roll, so forth. As somebody who produces it, I literally do have to sit there with somebody and say, okay, we need this, this, this. And will I ask, hey, what do you think is the best here? What do you think is best there? We have to be very careful if we air something later. We have to be very careful if there's somebody in a shot that is no longer a part of the program. We have to eliminate that shot. There's a lot of things you have to take into consideration when you do this. And it has to have somebody who is directing it and not and is so fully versed in what's going on. You do have to have somebody, it's their vision as to what you're doing there. And you have to look through and go, nah, I can't use that shot. Well, why can't I use the shot? Well, in the background is somebody who transferred. Right? Or in the background, it's somebody who took a job someplace else. Believe it or not, that comes into consideration. And you have to have somebody there knowledgeable enough to say that. Because not all the people you're dealing with are knowledgeable enough. I'm telling you right now, there's a very good chance that the person they took with to film this or do whatever may not have been the most experienced person on the lot. There's a very good chance of that. Right? It's a webisode. It's not for CBS. It's a webisode. All right. Let's talk recruiting. Ryan Snyder, Blue White Illustrated, Rivals.com. I don't know why we're talking today, Ryan, unless you want somebody who's going to be a babysitter for you, and I do have experience.
If you're in. I'll take whatever I can get.
I have a resume.
That's not necessary. I trust you.
There's only been one change in all of this, and that happened, I think, right after we talked. Mm-hmm. It seems like everything else has stayed stable, correct?
Yeah, for the most part. Devin Willock, offensive lineman out of New Jersey, that was a surprise. Surprise to me. Surprise to Penn State, from what I understand. Just kind of came a little out of nowhere. But really, just what it was in the end was Georgia just stepping up, and I guess that's where he wanted to be. So it's a loss. You know, at the same time, you know, they have a lot of good linemen. They're in a good spot with a lot of top 2021 linemen. I don't want to, you know, whenever you're losing a player that you had committed and you wanted, it's a loss. But, you know, I can think of, you know, a dozen players in this class that would have been a much bigger loss. So it hurts, but as long as they sign all 27 tomorrow, I think James Franklin would be pretty happy.
Which pretty much, it sounds like there really shouldn't be anything that happens over the next 18 to 20 hours that would change anything.
Yeah, God, I hope not. No, I really don't see anything. I've talked to, I think, all but one or two players in this class, you know, in the last couple of days, and all signs point to that. You know, I think what we'll see then in January is maybe, depending on who transfers out, a potential addition. But, you know, I don't see them adding anyone definitely before tomorrow, and everybody appears to be ready to sign. So should be no drama, which is, you know, sometimes for me it's a good thing, I think. But for fans, sometimes they like to, you know, to get excited about something to watch. You know, for example, last year was Noah Cain. But, you know, I think Franklin and his staff would take a no-drama early signing period every chance they get.
So yeah,
that's a good thing.
They got Noah Cain. Then, of course, 2 years ago was Micah Parsons, mm-hmm. where there was certainly plenty of drama where literally no one in the room knew.
Yeah.
I mean, literally. And I was like, okay. There you go.
That's rare these days. It's rare.
What has it taken in terms of the shift on everyone's part? And I'm talking across the country. It's not just Penn State. To say, okay, let's do this thing. We're going to do it 5 to 6 weeks ahead of where we normally do it. What has it taken in terms of a shift? And what has it taken in terms of staff to make sure the shift works?
Yeah, I think so. Offers were already kind of going out early, which is kind of what brought this into play. So from that perspective, it kind of fit in correctly. I think where it's been a bit more stressful or more work, I guess, is, you know, making sure you get your official visit in during the season. Schools used to kind of wait a little bit longer. They prefer to have guys come in, you know, in December or January, and yeah, you know, they just get so much more time with the staff. You know, when there's a big game like Ohio State, and of course they want to hold official visitors that weekend, but just the time's limited. You know, they can only put so much, into everything other than the game, of course. So I think from that perspective, it's been tougher from just talking to people at Penn State, making sure everything is coordinated perfectly and the visit's perfect. And, you know, but aside from that, I guess maybe bowl practice, it hurts that a little bit. You know, it just takes time away from that. But you know, they always had the contact period in December in December. So, you know, the coaches were already traveling and whatnot. I would say just making sure they get all their official visits in, and whether that's in December or whether that's during the season, you know, making sure they get all their key prospects on campus. And that's hard, man, to do it during a game week. You know, I've never had to do it myself, but I talk to people who, you know, it stresses people out, especially if you're coordinating something within, you know, 48 hours or so of the game and the visit itself.
Okay, now we talked about positional balance the last time, and it's a good positional balance as well. How interesting is it that when I was looking at star ratings and so forth, it looked to me like the 5 stars were all for the most part in the top 6 teams in the rankings. Then once you get to 7, it's really how many 4 stars you have.
Yeah. I mean, I think that just kind of speaks to college football in general right now, you know, where it's just Penn State's really just knocking on that door of getting in there. But, you know, look at the teams who are getting these 5 stars. It's the guys who have really been in the playoffs the last couple of years. So, I think really to do that is just go back and look at Penn State's Rose Bowl year. I think that's kind of the formula of how you take that next step. You're going to have to pull a couple upsets, surprise some people. Obviously, I think fans understand by now that Franklin and his staff are excellent recruiters. You know, everything off the field, they're on par with the best in the nation. I think from just Penn State's perspective, it's about taking that next step. And if they can do that on the field and put together multiple New Year's Six games, crack a playoff berth, you know, that's how they would get into that upper group of you know, Georgia's not there right now, but of course, you know, name the teams, Alabama, Ohio State, Oklahoma. And I think, and for the record, Georgia's down a little bit near Penn State right now, but they still have multiple scholarships to give, so you'll see them jump up. It's really just about taking the next step and putting it together over a year or two. And then, of course, just doing everything you can off the field, you know, on the recruiting trail.
Is Clemson a good example of that? Because it looks like they have more, quote, five stars than anybody else.
And they've been in the playoff how many years now?
Every year except the first one.
Exactly. So it's, and I think that just speaks also to the investment Clemson has put in. Anyone who follows recruiting has heard about Clemson's facility that they just put in. They have a mini golf course. I mean, all types of stuff that, don't get me wrong, is totally unnecessary. But, hey, when you're trying to win over 16, 17, 18-year-olds, it sells. So this is, of course, I think Penn State fans understand this now, especially compared to a couple years ago. This is extremely important, James. I think this was maybe even one of the most important things, aside from, I would actually maybe argue that it was the most important thing when it comes to, you know, the contract renewal and all that. Just staying on top of that stuff and, you know, constantly improving, not doing a project here and taking a break. That's what you're seeing at Clemson and Alabama and a lot of these schools that are consistently recruiting at an elite level. And I think James understands that his staff and everybody is doing everything it takes, you know, on their own and off the field, and you know, making sure they're doing all these visits. So you know, when you bring guys on campus, make sure you're going to wow them. And Penn State's improved a lot in that degree, but there's still a lot of work to do.
And this will be a year where obviously there'll be a change in offensive coordinator because Ricky Ronnie took the head coaching job at Old Dominion. So you know, anybody who moves and takes a head coaching job, everybody looks around and says, "Hey, that's great." For the most part, though, they've kept it stable on the staff. What has that meant in recruiting?
Yeah, it's important. And remember how I think it was when Gattis, well, not when Gattis left, it was when Gattis left. James brought that up, and Huff, I don't know if you remember that season.
Sure.
But that was really important to James 2 years ago. And, of course, he's gotten, you know, the support that he needs now to make sure that his assistants are getting paid well. And I'm really curious to see what this OC starts to make, because I think it's really going to show where Penn State is at in that commitment. You know, just look at some of the schools out there that are paying well over $1 million now. But, of course, get back to your question, just keeping guys together is extremely important. You know, obviously, when you go through the recruiting process, and the recruiting process is like 2+ years now for a lot of these elite prospects.
That's right.
You know, you don't want to see that coach that you built a really strong relationship leave, you know, what is it, 2 weeks before signing day, whatever it may be.
Right.
So it's very important, but at the same time, I'll say this. Franklin and the staff take an approach that is unlike some other staff out there where, you know, you have a regional recruiter and a position coach, and those are the two coaches that are contacting the player 80-90% of the time. Penn State does that to some degree, but they also make sure that when that player calls into their regional coach or their positional coach, you know, they bounce the phone around, and they FaceTime a lot. It's what they do. And, you know, they'll throw the phone over to Sider, who will throw it over to Limegrover, who will throw it over to Bowen. And they make sure that these guys are becoming familiar with everybody just in case that turnover happens. That is one of the – this is something I don't see at a lot of other schools. And I'm surprised by that because I've just have seen up close how successful Penn State has been with that approach.
Because the entire staff recruits a guy, which I think makes a big difference. It's not just the position coach or the area coach. They make sure they all get involved. And the reason they do that is that, hey, look – you know, you look around, that's still a familiar face or faces that are there. That's part of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and just one thing to add, from my perspective, in like a couple weeks from now, I'm going to have my colleagues and rivals reaching out to me and saying, who's Penn State's top recruiter this year? Because, you know, these sites, Rivals, 247, all these sites want to, you know, point to a couple coaches and say, hey, man, they got this guy, this guy, this guy. And Penn State usually, you know, we'll get a coach or two in there just because they're all elite recruiters. But it's hard to do that just because of how much of a group effort it really is. And that's been extremely successful. And, you know, I'm just surprised you don't see other schools taking this approach. It's worked really well for Franklin.
Now, here's one where I know everything's locked in on tomorrow. Where are they, though, when it comes to 21?
In a great spot, you know, three early commitments. And I think what grabs my attention with 2021 is that I think you can point to about two dozen players right now who are all top 250 prospects who have been on Penn State at least once or twice. Most of these guys have been here, you know, pushing three or four times now, and all will have Penn State among their top five. We've seen that before, and to some degree we saw that in this past class. But we also didn't have a season, you know, compared to this year where they're going to make a New Year's Six Bowl, you know, should get a win as long as, you know, everything goes to plan. And then, of course, have so much momentum. And, I mean, Penn State's going to be talked about a lot.
Sure, there will be.
This offseason.
Yes.
So that's going to help tremendously as well. I think if they can come, you know, get this win, you know, stay in the eyes of, you know, national media throughout the offseason, that's only going to help, especially, you know, possibly having maybe top six, top seven starts next season. So they're in a great spot with a lot of guys. You got to finish it. And, you know, right now all the on-the-field results are, you know, looking to – are in a good spot, at least, we'll say, to finish strong. So – but it takes so much more than that. All these recruits, there's going to be so many junior days and visits elsewhere and offers to come. I don't want to get fans too excited, but Penn State's in a very good spot. They just have to finish.
I've always felt along the way that the head coach is the guy that's, quote, the finisher.
Of course.
Okay? So when you talk to these prospects, what do they tell you about James Franklin, the finisher?
Honesty. It's always the first thing. And I think James does a great job with that. He just keeps it real. He's never going to promise a player, hey, you know, come in here. You're going to be second on the depth chart tomorrow, and as long as you have a good camp, we're going to get you playing. That's never how it works. And I think guys really gravitate to that. He also really has taken the whole academic side and ran with it. And I think that really wins over the parents, especially in the final weeks of the process. James is a younger coach, and he just knows how to relate.
Yes.
And I think that's the one thing that – you don't see everywhere. I covered Maryland with Randy Etzel, and I covered Pitt with Pat Narduzzi. I apologize if fans get upset with that. But I don't think just those two examples from what I've seen over there, they just don't maybe relate with teenagers as well as someone like James Franklin does. And I think the proof is kind of in the pudding with that one. But when it comes to finishing, like I said, academics and just honesty, man, it gets brought up 90% of the time with him, and I think it's sold.
Yeah, all right. As always, Ryan, thanks so much. Appreciate your time. I know it's a very busy time.
No problem, guys. Let's. January is going to be very busy, too, now. There's a February dead period, so we'll definitely be talking in January. I think we're going to see a lot of junior days. Even if the 2020 class is finalized, 2021 in the final 3 weeks of January should be pretty active. So we'll if we don't talk then or before then, we'll catch up in January.
Sounds great. Thanks so much, Ryan.
Take care, Steve. Take care, Tom.
Ryan Snyder, Blue White Illustrated, Rivals.com. Back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by our good friends at Sunbury Motors. Today's show brought to you by our good friends at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Neil Coolong in the final half hour. Our thanks to Andrew Callahan from the Boston Herald who joined us in the 3:30 half hour, and to Ryan Snyder who joined us this half hour to talk Penn State football recruiting. Tomorrow is National Letter of Intent Day. No need to call it, I think, the early signing period any longer. It is the signing day. And this is where I'd say 75 to 80% of all those who will sign on this day. And that'll be tomorrow. James Franklin will have a media availability tomorrow afternoon at 3:15. We're going to try and carry that for you. And then they have Bowl Media Day coming up on Friday. And they leave for the Dallas. The team's going to be staying in Dallas. They leave for Dallas Saturday. Today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. And don't forget, talk to Santa tonight from 6 to 7. Here we are with just a little bit more than a week to go before Christmas. It's a week to go before Christmas Eve. So the youngsters have another opportunity to talk to Santa tonight. You'll hear it on News Radio 1070 WKOK between 6 and 7. We've done this for decades, and the tradition better than ever. When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC way? The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Our play-by-play call today, more New Orleans Saints history.
12th play of the drive. First and goal from the 5. Breeze under center. I formation. Got takes it. The handoff. Looks to throw. Wide open. Touchdown! Josh Hill! 19 years. 273 games. Over 76,000 yards. And now, 540 touchdowns. Drew Breeze, take a bow.
It's amazing how one move can change history in so many ways. Drew Brees got hurt as the starting quarterback for the San Diego Chargers. And I believe at this point they've now drafted Phillip Rivers. You know, they drafted Eli Manning and they dealt him for Phillip Rivers. And there was no confidence in Breeze coming back to play for them because he got hurt. Okay. So now he becomes a free agent. His choices happen to be the Miami Dolphins and the New Orleans Saints. Well, the Saints had a horrible history before Drew Breeze got there. So most people thought, well, he's going to go to Miami. And instead he chose New Orleans. So now let's look at the dominoes of that. New Orleans goes on to do something nobody in my lifetime thought they would ever do. They won the Super Bowl. The New Orleans Saints, Super Bowl champions. Words you never thought would be in the same sentence. Now let's go back to Miami. Who's the coach you rejected at Miami? Didn't reject him, but who was the head coach of Miami and trying to get him to be a quarterback, and it turned out he went to New Orleans? Nick Saban. Nick Saban then leaves Miami. He takes the Alabama job. Miami continues to flounder. Alabama now has been flourishing, and it's amazing that if Breeze had signed with Miami, Saban might have stayed with Miami. How about that? It's amazing how one move can have a domino effect on so many others. Drew Brees. Yeah, Drew Brees never beat Penn State. He never did. Had a couple shots at Penn State. Never beat him. even in the Rose Bowl year. They lost here at Beaver Stadium. Such an emotional week, too, here. That was the week after Adam Taliaferro got hurt at Ohio State. I can remember being on the old main steps and the prayer service, and we're all locked up in arms. And Penn State won the game 22-20. Did I ever tell you the story, Matt, about the late game?
I don't think so, no.
Okay. On Thursday, the way Joe did things, and essentially everybody does the same. Bill does the same things, James in a lot of way, where you're trying to tune up for the game. So they're running late game stuff, and Tekus Pettigrew's playing safety. Joe was over on the offensive practice field. So from Haluba Hall, like if you're staying in the doorway of Haluba Hall looking at the grass practice field, the offensive field's to the right, the closest to the Lash Building. So Joe's over there. And Zach Wasserman and Zach Mills are the two scout team quarterbacks playing Drew Brees. So Wasserman is now the quarterback, and he throws one down the middle, and Tekus Pettigrew comes over, and he hits him right in the chest, and it goes to the ground. And Joe had this innate ability, and James has the same ability, to look over at just the wrong time. Right? And Joe gets, "That Tekus Pettigrew, that's the ball game." Right? Now you get to the game. Brees has it deep in his own end. He tries to throw one down the middle to Vinny Sutherland. And Brees throws it down the middle, and Tekus Pettigrew reads it perfectly, just like in practice. And the ball hits him in the chest, and it falls to the ground. And Jack says, "Oh, I can't believe it." And I looked over and I said, "I can't. I just saw it on Thursday." Penn State still won 22-20. All right. Is Duck Mania officially over?
I would say somewhat, but it was the right move to stick with him.
Yeah, last week. All right. With that, we bring in Neil Kulong, who was declaring Duck Mania over. Neil?
It was a great run while it lasted. But, kind of a funny thing. You wake up the next day, and it's kind of like, yeah, you know, this is kind of what it should have been like the whole time. Isn't it? I mean, we're really kind of playing with house money there for a bit.
Sure.
We saw the Duck we figured was gonna come out eventually, and that's where they are.
Yeah, and that's exactly where they are. Yeah, let's take something out of it. He went back and dedicated himself to being lighter, quicker, better shape. Have they found something in James Washington?
Yeah, you know, I thought a lot of that has been made, and maybe there are people inside the team that are saying this a lot more than what I've observed, but a lot of the development and the growth that we've seen from Washington from year one to year two, Mike Tomlin will even say it's attributed to simple maturation in the NFL. It's not easy to go from a college schedule to the draft process to mini camp, to training camp, into the season. That's a long stretch of transition. And you see most rookies, I don't want to say break down or get tired, but they're not the same players toward the end of the year because they haven't developed that conditioning yet. They haven't had that level of discipline physically as well as mentally as what they have. And it takes a little bit to grow into that. It's nothing that any player can really do anything about. It's just the natural progression of, you know, a 21, 22-year-old kid growing into the NFL. To me, that's really what Washington was more than anything. Most rookies on the Steelers, it seems like they come into their second camp having shed a few pounds, and it's because mm-hmm. they know exactly what to expect. They know how to prepare themselves, and they have cash to you know, bring somebody in to help them with that. They have the resources available. So I Washington is playing well. I'm not surprised. I remember talking to you about it when they drafted him. I thought he yeah. was a better pick for them
yes.
When he was drafted than Juju was. I really like Washington as a receiver. I loved him in college, and we're starting to see the benefits of that. I still don't think that they have him playing the role that he's going to play long term. I think, though, they have to playing him a lot more on the outside, a lot more at that split end because of the absence of Juju Smith-Schuster. I think long term he's probably more of your inside guy, and he's going to be able to play that very, very well. And I think he's done that, and that's definitely a benefit to the Steelers' season. It is getting him a lot of targets that he might not have gotten if Smith-Schuster didn't miss, you know, what is it, about half the season now. Right. That's a good thing, and I think we saw some good things out of him in this loss to Buffalo. But at the same time, if they're going to continue to have success, he and Hodges, he and Rudolph, whoever it is, the quarterback and the receivers need to get on the same page. You see it every game. They're off on routes. They're off on – they can't run any type of option with any of them because there's just not enough fluidity between the quarterback, what the quarterback is seeing, and what the receiver is seeing. I think they've definitely improved a lot in that area, Washington being the big one. But it's an ongoing process, and they're going to need to get a lot better overall communication, overall, you know, kind of practice and work together if they're going to, you know, go 2-0 here in the game, in the season's final two games.
All right. Well, exactly. I mean, they are going to have to do that as well. What did they say about James Conner? Because it seemed, I know he was hurt going into the game. I've got that part. But why? It just seemed in the critical part of the game when I thought he was having a good night, they didn't put him in there.
I don't know. It seems a lot to me like there might have been some disconnect. Again, with it kind of comes down to the fact that Smith-Schuster had half of the week of practice after the game plan had been implemented. After that, I think they had to change some things up. I think it might have been a situation where Conner, even though he practiced, he might not have been the guy that they were going to go with. They wanted to give him the start and kind of see how things went and called it off because a lot of their plan had changed. A lot of what Buffalo was doing early on, blitzing in particular, which is not something they expected him to do, I think it changed the situation. I don't think that they felt Conner was going to be able to stand up with his shoulder in pass protection,
okay,
and they wanted to throw the ball a little bit. So with that, I think this is all just pure speculation on my part. I think they had to go with other options that are probably still lesser options than Conner injured or otherwise, but they were protecting him. And I think with that, they had to balance it out. They couldn't say that Conner's going to come off the field on passing downs because not even a question. Conner is the best receiver among that group.
Right.
So not putting him in at all is probably the best way to try to disguise your intentions. But I'd argue at that point, you really don't have any intentions you need to disguise, not against that defense, not with as thin as your offense is. I don't know. In the end, I think it's a very difficult decision for them to make. I think they're in trouble if he's on the field. I think they're in trouble if he's off the field.
Fair
so
enough. Yeah.
Really, it just kind of speaks to the fact that they're a beyond depleted unit offensively, and they've been getting away with the field dressings that they've been putting on it over the last couple weeks, but you're not going to be able to do that against a team that played as aggressively and as well as Buffalo did.
Yeah. Obviously, we know how limited, I mean, the Duck is, but how concerning, is it a question of him holding the ball too long, or is there a concern that Buffalo got pressure with four?
Well, they definitely got pressure with four. They did blitz a bunch as well. They added some things I don't think the Steelers were really prepared for, stuff that I saw. It didn't look like that was what Buffalo had often did, but it is something they absolutely should have expected eventually. You know, it may be outside of earshot of Hodges. They can't be sitting around thinking these guys respect this guy as a quarterback. I don't think they're going to think like that. They're going to blitz. They're going to run blitz, which I think is a lot of what they did. And the blitzes are, you know, essentially they're counting the same when he drops back to pass. They wanted to throw a little bit more, I think, than Buffalo thought they were going to. But they sold out to stop the run and really kind of left it to one-on-one coverage on the outside, daring them to throw the ball. And Pittsburgh did, and Buffalo won based on that. But top to bottom, I just think that the situation that Pittsburgh was in, there wasn't a whole lot that they were going to be able to do. Now, my concern more than anything is why is it that tight ends seem to be anti-game plan every single week? I understand that Vance McDonald is out, and maybe he's out due to the fact that the only time the tight end gets the ball is 3rd and 14 when they give him a 2-yard dump-off pass to run headfirst into the linebackers. I mean, it doesn't really seem to make a whole lot of sense. They're not utilizing the middle of the field at all to the point where it's like – I'm an observer. I know something about the game of football. I don't know anything compared to the people that are putting it all together.
Sure.
But it's a fair question to ask. Why is the middle of the field completely ignored? And I'm not talking like there's a slight disparity between outside and inside. They're not throwing in the middle of the field at all. So it makes me wonder how much control Hodges is kind of taking on his own. How much does he want to show that he has an arm to prove all of his critics wrong? He's making a lot of, you know, he's attempting a lot of big-time throws, those long, deep-out throws. The two interceptions that he threw, those are long alley passes. Those are tough sure. throws to make. Those are kind of what separate the good college quarterback from the good pro. I'm not commenting on whether or not he should be making those throws, but it's like we saw it at the end, the last interception. He's got Washington underneath across the middle,
right.
And I hate to say it, but that's probably a touchdown. I don't think Hodges ever even looked at him. I don't think he even ever thought about throwing that.
But I also think the safety went where he went because Hodges doesn't look anybody off, and I think the safety just read his eyes and let Washington go.
Yeah, at the very least, he's able to play a hunch in a situation like that. What does that tell you about the 37 pass attempts that your quarterback had before that? They picked him off three times prior to that. One of them kind of mattered, kind of didn't. It looked more like it was a miscommunication on that first one, which was essentially a Jordan Berry special, a 15-yard punt down the field, which is not the worst thing in the world. It's not very good either. It was a bad throw. It was a miscommunication. But he made some awful throws in this game. And I can't help but think Buffalo didn't notice pretty quickly what he was doing all the time. And they ignored the running back with any kind of, you know, 5-7 route option that he might have had. They completely ignored the tight end. And again, unless it was, you know, third and long and they're just running him into a gauntlet of tacklers, they didn't try to do anything in the middle of the field. And it's hard for me to fathom that they took those routes completely out of the game plan. And coaches do not control the quarterback as much as people want to think. It's up to the quarterback to read the field and make the throw. They can tell him afterwards what they should have looked at and what to look for next time, but they can't tell him what to do during the play. So I have to think that Hodges has taken it on himself to throw where he's throwing. And they've got drag routes. They've got underneath stuff. There are hook to curl throws. He's just not making them, and I'm not sure why. And I thought it was interesting, Mike, today, that the way that he spoke about Hodges was he understands and he was not pleased with that performance, but it was more like, yeah, all right, we'll go with him again and see what happens. Sure. I think it wouldn't surprise me if he's on a short leash, and I think a lot of this is really going to be you need to start looking at the other options on the field, and if you're not able to do that, we're going to have to make another change. And I think it's fair of Tomlin, of Randy Fickner, to look at that possibility simply because I guarantee you the Jets know what just happened to them at Buffalo. They're going to get the same kind of treatment, and I'm not sure if Hodges is going to be ready for that.
Right. How'd you feel about the defensive effort? Look, the Bills are not going to be compared with any of the great offensive juggernauts of the 21st century, but they did well enough to score points. They took advantage of a short field on the punt you mentioned by Berry and scored. Overall, what'd you think of the defense? Because it was a night where they actually got Singletary to fumble twice, which he'd only fumbled twice all year going into the game.
Yeah, I think part of those fumbles were the fact they beat him up. I mean, they hit him hard. They were trying to get him to fumble.
They attacked him.
T.J. Watt made one of the best plays I've ever seen a Steelers outside linebacker make on the fumble that he forced. Just an incredible play. He had a couple. That might have been Watt's best game as a pro. In my opinion, he was all over the field. He impacted every phase of the game, every down. Just a phenomenal effort on his part. And I thought they played very well. John Brown is a highly underrated receiver. I've always mm-hmm. thought he's yep. really, really good.
Yes, he is.
And it wasn't going to be until he gets on a team that is willing to make him their primary option. And teams don't want to do that because they look at him and think he's a one-trick pony, that's all he's going to do. He's an excellent short-range receiver. He runs great routes, and he's very difficult to defend. And Steven Nelson learned that the hard way. Nelson gave him fits. Nelson battled him. Nelson is an excellent cornerback. Brown got him twice on, mm-hmm. on two great plays, two great throws. And a game like this, that's really what it's going to come down to. And that's a lot of it. John Brown, I think, going into that game, had like 330 career yards in three games against the Steelers. They're aware of him. They know him. They know what he's capable of doing. And he beat him again. So it's outside of Brown, who I thought played above and beyond anything we could have expected from him, and certainly there's a lot of praise to go around to the Bills. The game plan that they had, I thought, was excellent. It's exactly what they needed to do. I thought the Steelers stifled Allen well, but he didn't fall for their trap. He wasn't forcing anything. He wasn't playing out of frustration. He took his beating and didn't lose the game for his team, which is what he should have done. But it came down to, capitalizing on the short field that they got and big plays from John Brown.
Yeah.
So they defense definitely had a passing grade. I thought they had a lot of guys that played very well.
Yeah.
17 points wins you most games, especially when you've got two shots at the end zone at the end to tie it. Couple plays they could have made, but that's football sometimes, and the offense barely made any plays at all. So it definitely a good grade for the defense. If you're Cam Hayward, the way that he was almost chastising his teammates, his grade's probably a little bit lower for the unit, but I thought they played very well.
Now they have to go to MetLife and take on the Jets. The Jets, there was a period of time where I thought the Jets were playing a lot better. And then, to their credit, they have the ability to turn in an absolute stinker. They really do. Look, the Steelers, this is what I always love. You know, they play down to teams. I keep trying to point out, you're not good enough this year to play down to anybody. Some teams are playing down to you. How do you view this game with the Jets?
I think you're exactly right. I mean,
everyone's
going to come into it.
I hear this. They play down to teams. It's 2019, okay? Your team is not good enough to play down to anybody. There are some teams that have actually played down to you.
Yeah, it's the absolute truth. And what I get in this argument at least twice a week with people. It's not that the Steelers play down to their competition. It's that you've grossly overrated them because you think that by birthright, every single Pittsburgh fan should expect a championship. They should expect a win every time they play. That's a fine mentality to have, but it's not reasonable. Okay,
right.
If they lose to a team that has a worse record than them, that's not simply because the Steelers are a better team and they play down, right? There's a variety of seasons that go on within one full NFL season. Typically, you look at it in four-game increments. This team is vastly different than where it was first 4 weeks of the season. The 49ers team that they played in week two was not – or week three? Or week three. Was it absolutely not even close to the same team that the 49ers are today. So you lost to a good team then that didn't really look all that good in that week. It's about who you're playing at that moment in time. And to me, what that kind of defaults everything to is the guys on the other side get paid too. Okay, the guys on the other side have coaches as well. They have experience. They have all of these things. Sometimes they just match up better with you.
And also going to a game where the other side in this game is the better quarterback.
Yeah, and that's been the case for the Steelers all season long. The fact that they're 8-6 just shows how good their defense has been. We didn't expect that this year. They weren't playing like this early on in the season. They gave up 33 at New England in week one. They gave up 28 to Seattle the next week. They weren't playing like they are now. Things change. You improve week to week. You get better. You lose guys with injury. Imagine that, Pittsburgh. You should know about that by now. All these things come into it to make a dynamic group of players week in, week out. Your game plan has to change. What that really means is you can't look past anybody. And I've seen the Jets. I've laughed at the Jets. I know what the Jets' history are. The people that don't really care about that are the Jets. Okay,
right.
They're going to go out there to play because they're not playing for a Super Bowl. They're not playing for the playoffs. They're playing for their jobs.
Yes.
They're playing for their contracts. They're playing for their futures. Okay, their coach is going to have their active attention this week. Teams at the end of the year are dangerous in that regard because, in a way, they're all playing to their highest individual level.
Oh.
Now, that doesn't always translate
to
wins just because it's not a real pure team effort. But at the same time, if your defensive end needs a contract next season, he needs two sacks to get to a bonus and to kind of bump him up in estimation of free agent value, he doesn't care about the run. So if you have to throw the ball, he's coming after your quarterback.
That's right. All right. Neil Coulon, USA Today. Tomorrow's National Signing Day. We'll hear James Franklin's press conference tomorrow here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.